we go. Another week. Another week. It's time to say, let's go. Yeah! Hello and welcome to Unbought and Unbossed, Canadian political news and views. This is show number 128. Today is January 27th, 2010. Unbought and Unbossed is an independent voice dedicated to presenting and discussing the political and social issues most relevant to Canadian citizens. This show contends that the self-inflicted attacks of 9/11 are being used as the justification for the current overthrow of our democratic and sovereign nationhood, turning Canada into a corporate-driven plutocracy. The official story of the 9/11 terror attacks and the ensuing war of terror are deeply troubling and are at the forefront of this radio program. I strongly encourage listeners to question what you think you know about today's world events and to analyze the motives behind our traditional news sources. Each week, new segments of Unbought and Unbossed offer further evidence for these incredible claims, which are either omitted or distorted by the mainstream corporate media. Turn your television off. You are being lied to and conditioned to accept this madness as our inevitable future. We must work to return the future of the human race to its rightful owners. That's you. Okay, very nice. As always, that was Bruce Coburn with Actions Speak Louder.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Coming up, we're going to hear from DJ Shadow and then Ashley McIsaac as I tell you what's on this week. Okay, what's on this week? I have a telephone interview with Doug Shapira. He is of Southwest Ontario and the founder of Oath Keepers of Canada. He also hosts the Oath Keepers of Canada radio show every Sunday from 12:30 to 2 Eastern Time, and that's on the internet radio station therealpublicradio.net. The Real Public Radio. Doug is also editor of OwenSoundFreePress.com. Okay, let's see. Reg Argue was on the phone in a couple weeks back and suggested I get Doug Shapira on, and that's exactly what happened. So thanks, Reg, for the heads up. I'm going to read you a short piece that you can find on the OwenSoundFreePress.com, the website that Doug Shapira is the webmaster of. And again, he's talking about the Oath Keepers of Canada. And he says here, Mahatma Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr., both highly successful leaders in civil justice, understood that in order to avert tyranny and massive civil unrest, they needed to be proactive, nonviolent, and lead mass movements of well-informed and motivated people. In light of recent events unfolding globally, it is prudent to request that not only leaders and commanders take a moment to find out about Oath Keepers, but also their subordinates. Globalist doctrine is filtering down through the chain of command, and it is as important here in Canada as it is in the States, that our enforcement officers recognize this anti-democratic doctrine and uphold the Constitution and our rights and freedoms. The emergence of an Oath Keepers of Canada is needed whereby we as Canadians affirm an oath to one another in an effort to maintain our way of life, of which we are so rightfully proud. The following is a tentative collection of vows that I hope all will consider adopting. These vows are not carved in stone, and I encourage community dialogue to institute a standard oath that would be universally accepted by ideally everyone, not just the police and military. And then there's 10 oaths following, which are based on the Oath Keepers in the States. So some of the things we're going to talk about is obviously Oath Keepers of Canada. Also, the monarchy in Canada. Likewise, the Republic of Canada. A lot of people calling for that. And also perhaps living off the grid as well. I'd like to learn a little bit more about his radio show. So that will be in the first hour. In the second hour, I hope to read a rather controversial piece here. This article is entitled, Hugo Chavez Accuses U.S. of Using Weapon to Cause the Haiti Earthquake. It came out January 21st by Andrew Morin from digitaljournal.com. And to follow that up, well, basically he's talking about the HAARP weapon, which is the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program. So I'll tell you a little bit about HAARP according to Wikipedia. It's a really weak piece, unfortunately. The truth-telling, you know, the more controversial characters, they quite often say, well, you know, this seems a little bit biased. However, the HAARP piece is extremely biased, and there's no little tag saying so. So I thought that was rather questionable. And then to follow that up, the truther girl, Sonia, I have an audio piece that talks about the Haiti quake, HAARP, and the New World Order. So a little triplet there of looking at, is it possible that HAARP caused this most recent earthquake in Haiti and perhaps others in the past? Other governments other than Hugo Chavez has suggested so. So there you go. You're not going to hear that one on your TV, I don't think. And then we're going to conclude the show with Splitting the Sky at the 2009 Truth Convergence, Project Uncensored. His presentation was entitled Exposing the Bush-Cheney Cabal. So what that is about, a conference I put on last November, it featured 6 speakers. They're 6 separate topics, as a matter of fact, but the presenters, their information is such that, the government and our corporate media, either they omit those topics altogether, or when they do cover them, they distort them and pretty much lie about them. So I brought 6 people telling 6 different stories that you're not going to hear too many places, and tonight will be the concluding one. Splitting the Sky will be the 6th and final that, well, I will have played on the radio for you. First off, Kevin Annett, the whistleblower, former minister turned whistleblower looking at genocide. Paul Grignon looking at money issues. Nick Verestig looking at food security. Will Thomas looking at cell phones and other radio device technology, how it's not good for human beings and our cats. Then Wayne Pronte looking at false flag operations, including Swine 11. And then to conclude, tonight we'll be Splitting the Sky. Okay, there is a new website to me. It is FKN News, fucking news. And Deke Jackson is the person behind that. And he does these truth-telling, funny songs. And so we're going to hear perhaps 2 of those, depending on how time goes, but definitely 1. So that's something else you're going to hear tonight. And occasionally I read from the David Icke newsletter, and I'm going to do that again today. So this came out January 22nd, 2010. And he's calling it The Story of the Earth in Reverse. And he says, and David Icke is that. That is, the whole global political and economic system is run by dark suits trapped in left brain reality. This is why we live in a left brain society, and the right brain perspective is ridiculed or condemned as crazy. If you haven't seen the movie Avatar, I suggest that you do. It seems you probably have. It's making an awful lot of money and setting a lot of records. So he speaks of that movie here. David Icke says, the human invaders in Avatar personify this left brain domination. They had no appreciation or understanding of the interconnected harmony and mutual respect between the Na'vi, animals, trees, and plants. It was just mumbo-jumbo to them. The humans lived in the real world of physical apartness with the philosophy of see, want, take. Yes, indeed. See, want, take. If this means destroying the home and the way of life of people who happen to live on the resource deposits that you want to make your fortune, then so be it. What does it matter? They are just primitive savages, and we are only destroying a forest. Who cares? Send the boys in. The left brain mentality has no empathy with the consequences for others of its actions because, now this is a really good definition of empathy here, because empathy comes from making a connection to other expressions of life, be they people, trees, plants, or animals, and putting yourself in their situation. Left brain prisoners can't do this when they are decoding everything as individual with only space in between. The right brain knows that there is no space in between, only a single energetic field that connects us all. In this sense of the literal, in this sense of the literal connection between all apparently individual forms that give us a sense of empathy, which is the fail-safe system that prevents extreme behavior and actions that cause suffering for others. So there we are. The story of the Earth in reverse, looking at empathy versus the philosophy of see, want, take. Okay, very interesting. DavidIcke.com. Okay, let's move on to the weather, shall we? Very nice. Okay, well, I'm going to play a couple short clips for you while I get Doug Shapira on the phone. Again, he is the founder of Oath Keepers of Canada. He also has a radio show of the same title. He's the webmaster of OwensoundFreePress.com, and he claims that he lives off the grid as well. Very interesting. Okay, so the first audio clip we're going to play is, do you, this is a question, do you think that there is a difference between George Bush and Barack Obama? Well, when it comes to the events of 9/11, there is zero difference. Unfortunately, they are both playing the Great Oz from The Wizard of Oz, and remember, don't pay any attention to the man behind the curtain back there. So that's the first one. And the second one, it's from that Deke Jackson from Fucking News. That's FKNNEWZ. That's the YouTube channel. And it is the musical for Osama bin Laden. More 9/11 talk there. So let's move on to those short pieces, and hopefully I will have Doug Shapiro on the phone from the Owen Sound area of Southwest Ontario. Staying up awfully late. Good for him. Okay, friends, let's get on to that, shall we?
I'm aware that there's still some who would question or even justify the offense of 9/11. But let us be clear. Al-Qaeda killed nearly 3,000 people on that day. The victims were innocent men, women, and children from America and many other nations who had done nothing to harm anybody. And yet Al-Qaeda chose to ruthlessly murder these people, claimed credit for the attack, and even now states their determination to kill on a massive scale. They have affiliates in many countries and are trying to expand their reach. These are not opinions to be debated. These are facts to be dealt with.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th. Malicious lies that attempt to shift the blame away from the terrorists themselves, away from the guilty.
Do not arouse the wrath of the great and powerful Oz. I said come back tomorrow.
If you are really great and powerful, you keep your promises.
Do you presume to criticize the great Oz? You ungrateful creatures, think yourselves lucky that I'm giving you audience tomorrow instead of 20 years from now. The great Oz has spoken.
Oh.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. The great Oz has spoken.
President Bush there. Here at Fucking News, we can exclusively reveal almost immediately what you should think. I mean, who did this evil act of state-sponsored terrorism? It was Al-Qaeda, led by Osama bin Laden. Yes, reports are already coming in. In fact, yes, I'm just hearing I've been ordered by my paymasters in the corporate shadow government to tell you it was Osama bin Laden over and over again. Over and over again. Bin Laden did it. It was Osama bin Laden.
Here we go. Osama bin Laden is an international terrorist leader. He masterminded 9/11 and Al-Qaeda. A raw cave in Afghanistan with a little help from the Taliban. He's the only man who could have did this. Beat our billion-dollar defenses. Don't need no special detectives. Our intelligence never defective. Osama's the man, there's no doubt. Let's kill some folks and figure it out. Cause yo, that it's the USA. The rules have changed, so do it our way. Yeah. Osama bin Laden. He's the bogeyman we're blaming. Osama bin Laden. He's the bogeyman we're blaming. Say, hold on, Mr. Bush. If bin Laden's the man, then what's the rush? Let all his relatives flee the USA without by your leave. And is it true that the CIA created Al-Qaeda back in the day and the Mujahideen in Afghanistan when beating the Russians was the plan? I said, Osama bin Laden. He's just the bogeyman you're blaming. Osama bin Laden. Just the bogeyman you're blaming. Osama bin Laden is the bogeyman we're blaming. Whoa.
He's the bogeyman we're blaming. Who's the bogeyman, the bogeyman we're blaming?
I am Osama bin Laden, here in the Batcave in Torabara Mountains, from where my army of international terrorists struck a blow against, oh, you know the stuff about you being attacked in Western world, blah, blah, blah. So, come and get me if you think you're hard enough. It was me, you know I did it all using my mobile phone and the CIA's 1964 false flag bumper book for boys. Yes, it was me. I'm the Muslim extremist, and I'm very bad. Come and find me.
That's FKN News, otherwise Fucking News, with Osama bin Laden. And then we heard from George Bush and the current puppet president talking about do not question 9/11. That is not acceptable. And so the official story is staying through, and isn't that unfortunate? However, as promised, I have Doug Shapira on the other end of the phone. Doug, welcome to the show.
How you doing?
Oh, just fine, partner. Now, you're 3 hours difference, so it's a little bit late for you. I want to thank you for for staying up this late and making it on a Vancouver Island radio show.
Well, thanks for having me on.
It's absolutely.
Definitely worth staying up a little bit later than I'm used to at this point in time.
Very nice. Now, you're also a radio show host.
I am, yes. Just recently became a radio show host. So
okay.
We're just trying to, you know, sort of promote this thing. One of them is the Oath Keeper show, and another one is the Inside View from Canada. It actually broadcasts out of the United States, strictly over the Internet.
Okay.
And they're both centered around solution building. One of them primarily is sort of looking at the Canadian Constitution, the whole political paradigm in Canada and in the provinces, and we're questioning some of that. There's a lot of anomalies associated to what we call the Canadian Constitution, so I try to use it as a forum to educate myself and then try and get other people involved in the process and questioning the whole thing and saying, okay, what can we do to solve this? Are we going to accept this sort of political paradigm that we've had since 1867? It has evolved a little since then, but not really enough as far as I'm concerned. Are we going to accept that? Or are we going to shoot for the stars? Are we going to look for something new? And there's a lot of people out there, Ray, that are looking for something new. And then the next show is what we call the Real Veterans Show, Foreign and Domestic United, otherwise known as the Oath Keepers of Canada show. And that, of course, showcases veterans of the military, police. They could be from Canada. They could be from anywhere across the world. What their concerns are, how do they fit into the solution-building process. And at the same time, Oath Keepers of Canada is, without getting into a lot of detail at this moment, basically asking active members of our military, police, and you know, similar type authorities to act in the best interest of the Canadian people.
Right, right. Fascinating. That I definitely want to come back to that topic. Now, these radio shows are on therealpublicradio.net. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, and I've got you down for Sunday from 12:30 to 2 Eastern time. Is that also the right time?
Well, if we're talking Eastern time for the Oath Keeper show on the realpublicradio.net, it's 3:30 to 5 p.m. Eastern time.
Okay.
So you'd
okay.
have to adjust that accordingly for the folks out on the Pacific Coast.
Gotcha. Yeah, so that's 3 hours in front of us. Okay, very nice. Now, you're also, are you the webmaster as well as the editor of the owensoundfreepress.com, a news-based website?
That is correct, yes.
Okay,
I've
nice.
Been publishing a paper in print for going on to 3 years now, and I've had the website up for a little over a year.
Okay, nice. So you're doing, what flyers that you're distributing around your communities, or?
Well, generally speaking, it tends to be about a 20 to 30 page newspaper.
Wow, okay.
I try to get some local news in there, and of course, you know, a lot of stuff that's happening nationally and even internationally. But more recently, I've been trying to focus more on a solution-building process. There's all kinds of new shows out there, mainstream, non-mainstream, you know, alternative. Some of them are really fantastic. And by the way, I listened to your show. It's just totally amazing.
Oh, hey, thanks, Tom.
But I find that there's a little bit of a deficit out there on, you know, forums for searching out solutions. You know, we're overwhelmed with problems. We know that, with a few small exceptions, very small exceptions, government in Canada is not working on behalf of the people. They're not even accountable to the people officially.
No.
So how do we solve this? And I feel that it's important to work from the bottom up. So we have to sort of build a foundation. And if you want to talk about it a little bit more as the show goes on, I can sort of articulate some of the problems that I'm sort of trying to deal with and other people are sort of really becoming conscious of in the last little while.
Sure. Well, I'm not too sure if you would call yourself a member of the truth movement. I do myself, and I find that it might not be so much the bullhorning on the sidewalks as more of kind of a face-to-face, neighbor-to-neighbor approach of I guess, disseminating news that, you know, goes against everything, you know, Jane Canada sees in their paper and in their mainstream papers and on their televisions. It certainly seems like an uphill climb, you know, when the zeitgeist of the, you know, I guess kind of our fascist corporate mentality, you know, goes against so much of what, you know, the stories that I report on my radio show, and I'm going to guess, you know, stories that you also cover.
Well, sure. Like, I remember growing up, and my parents had the news on at 6 o'clock every night, and, you know, I was conditioned to believe and even understand that everything that was being broadcasted on those news programs was everything that you needed to know, and it was, in fact, accurate, you know. And it was only, I mean, I had questions before in my life, but it's only been in the last 4 or 5 years, Ray, that I really started to question things. And, you know, it got to a point where I said to myself, okay, what is the truth? And once you start asking that, and once you start demanding the truth and really, really searching it out, it's an amazing journey. It's an amazing journey. It can be stressful. You can end up as an anathema, you know, sort of a public enemy.
Mm-hmm.
But it is an incredible story. And the truth behind Canada, Ray, I find to be an incredible story because there's so little information on Canada. You can get on the internet, you can find out about the Federal Reserve, you know, how that's a private corporation and all that,
right?
Contrary to the mainstream media's reporting and all that. It's easy to find things out, but try to find out the true nature of the Bank of Canada. Try to find out about how there was conscription in Canada and concentration camps and, you know, all these different things. And all these things actually did exist in Canada. And, you know, and history tends to repeat itself. So that's where history becomes an important teacher for me.
Yeah, good point. I'm wondering if maybe we can move into talking about the Oath Keepers of Canada and how that came to be. I know that the Oath Keepers in the States has been around for, what, maybe a year and a half now, and that this one is based loosely on the same idea. Can you tell us how this project came about?
Yeah, the Oath Keepers of Canada was definitely at least partially inspired by the American Oath Keepers. I heard about it. It's getting to be about a year ago when I heard about it, and I thought, what a colossal idea.
Mm-hmm.
And why not try to implement the same thing here in Canada? I am an Army veteran myself, and I remember signing up for the military and going in for my swearing in, and I thought, wow, this is going to be great because now I'm going to pledge allegiance to the people of Canada and to the Constitution and all that. And I remember putting my hand up, Ray, and the officer, you know, there was a few other recruits with me, maybe a handful, maybe 10 of us or so, all standing there swearing in at the same time.
Okay.
And the officer swore us in, and the only thing that it stipulated is pledging an oath of allegiance to Queen Elizabeth, her heirs and successors, and that was it. And I stood there, and I thought, well, where's the rest of it?
Right.
And the officer looked at me, and he says, you know, this is your chance to pull out, you know. And I said, no, I guess I'll go along with it.
Huh.
But it really wasn't what I thought it was going to be from the get-go, you know.
Okay.
And anyway, getting back to your original question, I started looking at some of the videos of the Oath Keepers in the United States, and I thought, well, how can we adopt that here? And, well, you know, the distinct difference, the division between what a Canadian serviceman is swearing an oath to and an American serviceman is two different things. Americans swear to uphold the Constitution, which protects the people, and to protect their nation from all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Okay.
And I thought, well, we could probably, you know, implement at least that in spirit here, because ultimately, telling our police and military that they should give up their oath to the Queen is actually defined as high treason, so it's against the law. Now, I don't necessarily agree with that law, but I've sort of worked out Oath Keepers over the last little while to be more compliant with the Criminal Code of Canada, so that what we're doing is totally legal.
All right.
And basically what we're asking is that Oath Keepers of Canada, whoever they might be, I mean, you don't necessarily have to be in the military or police or anything like that, that they won't obey orders to conduct warrantless searches, any moral searches, and questioning and property confiscation of the Canadian people. And we ask that Oath Keepers obey the laws of trespass and respect private property and do not subject Canadians to military tribunal, and also respect the laws of habeas corpus, you know, because as it's, I mean, you're in the truth movement, Ray, like, let's not fool ourselves or beat around the bush here. I mean, our freedom or any freedom that we ever thought we had guaranteed to us in Canada is rapidly eroding. And, you know, it's important for us to, whether we're police officers or military or not, to make an oath to each other to say that, you know, we are fellow Canadians. One might be black, one might be white, one might be Islamic, one might be Jew or Christian. But ultimately we have that common thread. And then when it comes down to it that, you know, whether we're legally given an order or not, if it doesn't comply with our moral conscience, if it's not a good, right thing to do, then we will seriously consider not doing it, right?
Well, at the end of World War II, the Nuremberg trials basically boiled down to just because you were performing an order doesn't get you off the hook if what you did was illegal.
Yes, and of course that pertains to international law, okay? Military code of discipline, generally speaking, can easily impose summary trials on soldiers for, you know, just simply not having a haircut or your mustache too long. It's that simple. But ultimately, I mean, we've been engaged in a war in almost a decade now over in Afghanistan, which is totally immoral, illegal as far as I'm concerned, unlawful, and just totally a waste of life and resources. And I think these types of things that you might have been referring to in your question here, as far as I'm concerned, are happening on a daily basis in Afghanistan and probably more recently in Haiti. And, you know, I wouldn't necessarily depend on the international community or the United Nations to make things right, because that mission over in Afghanistan is actually ran by the United Nations. The International Security Assistance Force, the Canadians wear a badge indicating that, and that's actually a prerogative of the United Nations. So to think that we could simply turn that mission into a United Nations mission over there and turn it into something that's totally benevolent for the people there is a myth.
So what is your take on the UN? Are they the good guys that they pretend?
Well, they definitely pretend to be good guys. If you look at the United Nations mission in Rwanda in 1994, I believe it was, General Romeo Dallaire, Canadian general, was in charge of this multi-nation task force that was over there that was set up to prevent, you know, ethnic conflict between the Hutus and the Tutsis. And Dallaire knew full well that a big genocide was going to go down. He knew where the weapons were. He knew where the culprits were. He called up the, you know, the UN General Assembly, basically talked to Kofi Annan and the whole bunch and said, look, let me intervene. Let me stop this darn thing. And he was told specifically, do not interfere. And then once the rioting and the fighting and the genocide broke out, he tried to report it to the UN. They told him once again, do not intervene. He reported it to Ottawa. Ottawa said, well, it's out of our jurisdiction because you're under direct control by the United Nations. And that's just one small example, Ray, of hundreds, maybe thousands of different missions and things that have basically been a complete misrepresentation and have created an oxymoron out of the term, quote, peacekeeping, unquote.
Right, right. Good point. And as I read in introducing you, you spoke of the pride that Canadians have of their past, and mm-hmm. and sadly, the things that Canadians are proud of, I'm finding, don't really exist anymore.
Yeah.
But you know, the peacekeeping, of course, is kind of that key word that, you know, Canadians were known for, and now we're a full on offensive. You know, following the states.
Oh, don't get me wrong. Like, I can speak from personal experience. A lot of what has gone on under the UN by Canadian forces is admirable. It's definitely helped out a lot of people. Mine clearing in Cyprus in the 80s, all these different things have gone on that have been of some benevolence to the people. But that's just it. You know, the United Nations works that way, and a lot of this sort of tyrannical empire works all that way because it will do a few things that are benevolent, you know, and that's that, and in some cases it may not even be real, but it gets into the international media, and Reuters and Associated Press are owned by the Rothschild family,
yeah.
And the Rothschild family, generally speaking, runs the United Nations, so they pretty well got all the bases covered. So it's pretty easy for the United Nations to be presented in the, at least mainstream media, as this, you know, benevolent organization dedicated to humanitarianism.
Sure, sure.
But when you talk to a lot of the soldiers that were involved with that, I'm going to have a soldier on my show this Sunday on the Oath Keepers show on the realpublicradio.net from 3:30 till 5. His name's Jay Foreman, and he lives out in this area here close to Owen Sound, and he served in Somalia in the 90s and also in Bosnia during those United Nations missions. And I've spoke to him before, and there's a lot of startling things that went on, according to him, that, as far as I can tell, was not necessarily reported in the mainstream.
Okay.
This is the kind of thing that I think the Oath Keepers show can kind of get out to the people.
Okay, forgive my ignorance. A former military person, are there restrictions on what you're allowed to speak on publicly?
Well, I mean, generally speaking, there's, you know, there's four levels of information, you know, there's confidential, there was another one, and secret and top secret. So ultimately, there are things that, you know, you should not disclose even after you're out. And I'm not interested in disclosing those types of things. I'm interested in getting at the nuts and bolts of what's going on.
Yeah.
I'm looking at a Canada, first off, where our, you know, our institutions of government are accountable first and foremost to the people of Canada. And in conjunction with that, I'm looking at a Canada where our police and military are also first and foremost accountable to the people. So this is the type of thing that I want to get at. And, you know, we're spending a lot of resources. We're losing a lot of good men and women, you know, overseas in these missions that, frankly, I don't think we have any business being involved in. When there's lots to do here, and I really think that, you know, if we're going to work towards having a truly free society here, The only way to have a truly free society or to guarantee a truly free society is to have some capacity to protect it. And that is going to be a giant challenge for Canada, because Canada has been orchestrated to be a country that doesn't necessarily have a military force large enough or powerful enough or well-equipped enough to actually maintain some sort of, you know, force that could be large enough to really defend our borders and our interests here domestically, never mind messing around with a bunch of stuff that's going on in all these other countries, which by and large is just basically advancing the whole agenda of what I often call the new/old world order.
Mm, okay. I just want to remind listeners that we are listening to Doug Shapira. Am I saying that correctly?
That is correct.
Okay. Doug Shapira of Southwest Ontario, founder of the Oath Keepers of Canada. So that is who you are listening to. And the radio show is the Unbought and Unbossed radio show. So let us continue. I wonder if you could speak on the RCMP right now. There's been some trouble with them, certainly in Montebello, Quebec police, but, taking part in, instigating violence. It appears to be the attempt of at the Security and Prosperity Partnership meeting in, I guess that was 07 now. Boy, time flies.
Yeah.
What is your take on the RCMP's role in Canada, and are they successful? Are there any changes you'd like to see?
Well, like I said, I think that, the whole Oath Keepers concept is not necessarily an organization where people, sign up to be contractual members. We don't want to put any of our good officers and soldiers on a list, because, the way things are going right now, if the wrong people got a hold of the list of all the good guys, the good guys might disappear really quick.
Yeah.
I'd also like to create an incentive among, police and military to actually act upon their own conscience and to work in the best interest of the people. And listen, doing what I do, I meet all kinds of people, and I've met all kinds of former police officers that tell me the same thing over and over again, Ray, that they worked undercover for several years. One of them was an RCMP officer. And, they would infiltrate organizations, neo-Nazi organizations, communist organizations, and the first thing that they would do when they got into these organizations is that they would sort of corral all the members into criminal activity, be it publishing racial hate propaganda, to getting involved with theft, drugs, you name it. And then once they accomplished that, then they would do their sting. So it's kind of like, the whole vaccine thing where you create the disease and sell the cure.
Right.
Well, we don't need that, okay? We want to establish a free society in Canada. And I'm not against police and I'm not against military, because we need that. We need that. But we don't need the corruption. So Oath Keepers is all about that. And what I suggest, if I could just add something, if people could get onto my website at www.owensoundfreepress.com.
Mm-hmm.
And on there, there's an Oath Keepers printout. You'll see it. It's like the second blog that's on there. You can actually print out a one-page document. It's got a lawful disclaimer on the top that basically points out that what the Oath Keepers is doing is within the confines of the Criminal Code of Canada. It has a concern in the middle about the current state of affairs and how our freedoms and liberties, if you will, in Canada are decaying more and more by the minute in some cases. And then at the bottom, there's a whole list of issues that we ask Oath Keepers of Canada to consider if they are given orders that will infringe upon the best interests and good order of our communities and the people of Canada.
Okay.
And so basically what I ask is people print that off, put it in their glove box. If they get pulled over by a, we call them ride out here in Ontario, you know, these drunk driving roadside inspections.
Okay.
Pass one to an officer. What's the worst he can say? No, I won't accept it. Because often they'll say that, but often they will take it. Or keep one in your wallet by chance you ever get arrested or something. Don't carry any ID. Just carry one of these. Get them to read that. And we had, what was his name there? He's out from your way. Well, he's originally from here. Mark Emery was out in Owen Sound this summer.
Okay, yeah.
And he did a big speech down at one of our parks. And, of course, all the police were there. And I got on the megaphone and I was talking about Oath Keepers of Canada. And a bunch of people came up and they took the flyers off me that explain everything that we're asking for with the Oath Keepers of Canada. And they handed it to the police officers, and they took them.
Hmm.
The one police officer said, yeah, give me half a dozen.
Hmm.
Give me a bunch. So, I mean, you might meet a soldier at Tim Hortons or wherever you have coffee. Hand it to him. Ask him to read it. And the bottom line is we're not inciting mutiny. We're not inciting mutiny. What we're asking is that these individuals and small groups within these units of soldiers and police and other ones, Ministry of Environment, all these other enforcement agents are good people to sort of target for this information and to really start thinking about, okay, is just doing my job a good excuse? Because you have to remember, and there's some questions about all of this too, about how this all went down, but the boys that were turning on the gas in the gas chambers in Auschwitz, they were just doing their job too, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So just doing my job, don't necessarily cut it anymore as far as I'm concerned. Right.
Now, it sounds like we could easily go into the issue of war resistors. There's a number of Americans who have sought sanctuary here in Canada.
Yeah, right.
And things aren't going too well.
No.
Canada seems to be sending them back.
Yeah.
How does that or does it fit into the ideas of the Oath Keepers to, consciously decide that, you know, I can't do this and I won't take part in, you know, the killing and the theft of another nation.
Right.
Well,
part of the Oath Keepers mantra is to maintain that we will not allow foreign troops and foreign police to impose or even operate themselves on our soil. Because ultimately, a nation that professes to be free must have national sovereignty and must have full control and legal jurisdiction over its own affairs.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, ultimately, my viewpoint on these war resistors is that they're here on our soil. And if they're here on our soil, they come under our jurisdiction. But unfortunately, you know, the resolution that was passed in the parliament there, I think it was a couple of years ago with respects to this, is so open-ended and ambiguous that it really doesn't say anything other than if the government wants to get rid of them, they'll get rid of them, you know. So I think ultimately it comes down to the individuals in Canada resisting this tyranny that's coming from Ottawa, you know. I mean, ultimately, there's going to be a revolution in Canada. We want it to be peaceful. I don't want any bloodshed, and I'm not intending on creating any. I'm totally about peace. I don't like war.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, we the people of Canada are going to have to say no to a lot of these things. And one of the most important aspects of civil disobedience is to get the police and military to resist these things that are fundamentally wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was a movie, I have a feeling that you're going to be rather familiar with it, Sir No Sir, looking at a documentary looking at Vietnam and the soldiers showing the story of how they refused their orders in many, many cases, and, you know, both on the war front and at home here.
Right.
Powerful movie, for those who haven't seen it, Sir, No, Sir.
They have seen it, right?
Yeah, yeah. Good. I want to remind our listeners that I'm speaking with Doug Shapira of Oath Keepers of Canada. Now, we're sort of winding down. We've got about 10 minutes to 9, so
yeah.
I would certainly love to keep you at least that long and maybe a little bit longer if that's okay with you.
Yeah, I think I can manage it.
Okay. There's
you
a couple...
got me fired up now.
Good, good. There's a couple topics that we haven't hit yet.
Yeah.
One of is I have written down that our government is de facto and that the monarchy ended in Canada in 1901. That was one of the points that you sent me in our preparation for tonight's interview. Would you like to explain what you mean by that? That the
I can elaborate on some of that.
Okay, sure, yeah. If you'd like to touch on that, let's learn a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, as most Canadians know, in 1867, through a document or a piece of legislation that was generated, keep in mind, by a foreign parliament, the Parliament of the United Kingdom, the British North America Act was enacted on July 1st of 1867, which established the Dominion of Canada. It didn't really establish a nation. What it really did is it took three, perhaps four, depending on how you look at it, Upper and Lower Canada, Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, and combined those colonies into more of a super colony. So it was more like a corporate restructuring than any kind of independence move at that point. And as a matter of fact, from what I understand, a lot of those provinces actually had more individual autonomy prior to Confederation than after. But anyway, getting back to your direct question there, if you look in the Constitution, it's stated directly that the executive authority of and over Canada is hereby vested in the Queen. And initially, in 1867, that very same section in the Constitution said that the executive authority of Canada is hereby vested in the Queen, her heirs, and successors.
Okay.
In 1893, British Parliament, or the Parliament of the UK, enacted a piece of legislation called the Statute Revision Act. And subsequently, a number of things happened with regards to that Statutes Revision Act coming into force, because keep in mind, at that time, British Parliament could directly impose laws onto Canada from their parliament in London.
Okay.
What happened is the British North America Act was amended. So the part that said initially that the executive authority over Canada is the Queen and her heirs and successors, the part about heirs and successors was taken out. And there's a whole other section that was in there, Section 2, where it established that anywhere in the Constitution where the Queen was referred to, it was also referring to any heirs and successors after the Queen either abdicated the throne or died. Well, all of that was taken out. It was very specifically taken out, repealed.
Okay.
Queen Victoria, who was the Queen in 1867, when Confederation was finalized on July 1st of 1867, died in 1901. 8 years after the Constitution or British North America Act of Canada was revised to remove any idea that an heir or successor to her throne would be the executive authority over Canada. Also, part of your question was whether can, and I can get into more and more about what I just stated, but I don't want to take all night. We've only got a limited amount of time.
Okay.
Anyway, getting back to Canada's government being de facto, with regards to some of these anomalies in the British North America Act, that has established a lot of question as to the legitimacy of the Canadian government.
As a matter of fact, in 1950, there was a Supreme Court case where it was stated in their records that, quote, Canada governs by tradition, convention, and custom, not lawful authority, or lawful right, rather, unquote. So to me, that creates an issue where Canada's government, similar to other Commonwealth countries, including Australia and New Zealand, in fact, have a de facto or an unofficial government that essentially, definitely in Canada, I'm not quite sure, Australia or New Zealand, I can't answer for that 100%, but in this country, it could at least be well interpreted through some of the things that I just said, that our federal government most definitely is de facto and may in fact have no lawful right to govern. And there's a piece of legislation in the Criminal Code of Canada, Section 15, without quoting it verbatim, indicates that anyone in Canada who does not obey or through an omission breaks a law from a de facto sovereign is not liable to any penalty from that sovereign.
Okay.
That essentially means that if the government is de facto, that the laws that are made are also de facto, and that the people of Canada, and I'll try and get away with this in a court of law, call me if you can, but the people of Canada are under no obligation to follow those laws. But I'm starting to find out, or at least I have the conspiracy theory at this point, that that is maybe why a lot of these major corporations in Canada are getting away with theft, rape, and quite literally murder without any impunity.
Right, right. Yeah, that's come up with, I guess, Canadian corporations are basically running some sweatshops, so that's coming in Haiti. So that's been making the news recently.
Yeah.
Okay, well, now, I'm a little bit confused. Canada is considered to be a constitutional monarchy. We have a governor general who is supposed to be the go-between between the crown and the Canadian government.
Right.
Everything seems to be set up that we are still a full-on, property of the monarchy.
I can give you a little bit more information on where we fall in under the monarchy.
Okay.
In 1931, again, the Parliament of the United Kingdom enacted a piece of legislation known as the Westminster Statute. The Westminster Statute pertained to not only Canada, but also New Zealand, Australia, South Africa, it's now the Republic of Ireland, which has been totally lost to the European Union, maybe one or two other countries. And essentially, it established those countries as dominions. And in that legislation, it says that not only can the Parliament of Canada, after that piece of legislation was enacted, not only can the Parliament of Canada, but also the legislatures of the provinces accordingly of Canada, could enact legislation irregardless of whether it was repugnant to British law.
Okay.
So from my understanding, the function of the Governor General and the Lieutenant Governors of the provinces is to ensure that any legislation that's passed through those houses before it gets rubber stamped by them, if in fact it was repugnant to the British law, that it would never get passed, you know. Now, if you really get deep into what's going on out there, it's really the reverse order, because a lot of what's going on and a lot of the stuff that's being pumped through our provincial legislatures and through Parliament really come from, not necessarily directly from the Governor General, but who she actually works for, because she's representing the Queen, which is really a representation of the limited liability corporations, but for the most part, not truly, but for the most part, are running this country. So the problem becomes we don't have a government that is accountable to the people. We have a government that's accountable to corporations, foreign powers, and by and large, the true seat of world government.
Mm. Yeah, that seems to be accurate. Can you conclude perhaps on a positive note what you think Canadians should do in order to, obtain an actual representative democracy, which, you know, I think we both agree we're not being represented, not we the people, certainly.
No. I mean, I've been studying the Constitution and a lot of other related documents. Some of them go back to the 1700s, some of them more recent. I'm coming to the conclusion that it's impossible to really fix things with the current political archetype that we have here. And I feel that moving towards a republic and declaring our independence 100% from all foreign powers to begin with would be a step in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of people say, well, look at the United States. They did the same thing, and they're in a total disaster. And that is correct. And whether they truly got their independence either is very much in question, because there's a lot of information that would prove otherwise. But
right.
At any rate, at least, you know, I'm not saying that I want a mirror image of America up here, because I do believe we're distinctly Canada.
Mm-hmm.
But at least in America, there is the apparatus. There is guideline. There is the foundation for a truly free society. It actually exists. If they stuck to the rules that were made there, for the most part, America could be a model nation, could be the dream nation to live in, and that's what it was supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Canada was also supposed to be that way. Well, Canada never got around to setting up a true foundation to make that happen, to make sure that there was a set of rules that are... See, a constitution has to, as far as I'm concerned, and a lot of philosophers like John Locke and Edmund Burke and people going back to the Enlightenment, Charles de Montesquieu, all these people profess that a constitution had to, first and foremost, articulate the will of the people and be law that people impose on the government to limit their power. And what we have here in Canada, this British North America Act, does in no way come from anybody that ever has lived here.
Hmm.
And for the most part, with maybe a few small exceptions, does not concern itself with the best interests of the people. It's merely a piece of statutory law that can be amended just like the Highway Traffic Act, if they want to, you know.
Okay.
So, and the important thing is that if you have a proper bona fide constitution, all laws that are made subsequent to that must comply with that constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And in the United States of America, they have a Bill of Rights. We have a Bill of Rights here too, but it isn't worth the paper that it's printed on, and really wasn't to begin with. And Pierre Elliott Trudeau sure made damn sure that it was worth nothing after he was done with it. But the Bill of Rights takes the first 10 amendments of the U.S. Constitution, and it makes them absolute restrictions on government. And the first two were really important to the colonialists that, you know, lived in these colonies that eventually became the first 13 states. And the first one was their, you know, freedom of speech and freedom of religion, because they wanted to practice their religion the way they wanted, because they weren't allowed to do that, a lot of them, back in England and Europe where they came from.
Right.
And the second one was the right to bear arms.
Okay, good
because
point.
Because they knew that, and it still is true today, that the biggest threat to humanity, to people in civilized nations, throughout history has been their own government.
Yeah.
So by establishing this Bill of Rights that could not be changed by the government, and it actually can't even be changed through democracy, because if 99% of the people woke up tomorrow and said, well, we were going to repeal the first two amendments of the Bill of Rights, it couldn't happen. Because this thing protected people from the government and their intrusions. And actually, as much as I am a supporter of democracy, there's a good side to it and there's a bad side to it.
Right.
And unfortunately, we're in a society right now where you can go down the street. I don't know how you feel about it. I think I know how you feel about it. But you go down the streets of this town, and you'll probably find that a majority of the people, depending on where you are, would likely support a world government in replacement of any kind of national government that we have here.
Okay.
So it's like, okay, so now democracy is the will of the people. So the people have been brainwashed and whatever you want to call it, conditioned to believe that global warming's a real thing and we all have to die because we're giving off too much carbon dioxide, and that we have to let the banks and the Vatican, which is the true seat of world government, and I'm not talking about the Catholic religion, I'm talking about the Vatican, it's a different entity, is really where the New World Order, top of the pyramid is going to control everything. Absolutely. They don't even understand what they're getting into.
Okay, well, that's a big topic. However, we are winding down on time. Maybe quickly, if you can, don't know how you're going to wrap that up. But
it could go on forever.
Give us, I guess, maybe a best case scenario for Canada and things that we can think on and organize around, and then let's repeat your contact information for.
Sure.
Listeners, I'll just repeat, we're listening to Doug Shapira of Ontario, founder of the Oath Keepers of Canada. So I guess we're going to be wrapping up the interview here, so I'm going to give you the last word.
Okay. Well, a couple of quick things that I recommend. I'm not dogmatic. I'm not going to tell people what to do. I'm just recommending. www.owensoundfreepress.com is my website. First big thing is, get the Oath Keepers printout, hand it out. It's got the Oath Keepers show schedule on it. Displays it in Eastern Time and Pacific Time, so it works great for people out in Vancouver. Perfect for the Olympics.
Yeah, there you go.
Hand those out. Also on there, if you do a little search on there, there's a little search window on there. Google in on my website, Declaration of Independence. I've got a proposal for a Declaration of Independence on there. So that's something to look into, because first big step towards freedom is independence. My email address is osfreepress@gmail.com. Send me your ideas, your concerns. Send me a story to publish on the website. There's another website, Canadian Party for a Republic. This guy, Sam LeBaire, that runs it, he is primarily dedicated to this thing. Get involved with it. April 22nd is Earth Day, in response to Earth Day, which is a United Nations effort. A bunch of us have started up an idea, and it is catching on the same day, to have something called Global Freedom Day. Where hopefully people have town hall meetings where they might invite some guest speakers to talk about this thing,
okay.
Start community forums. And the other thing is, if you get on to the realpublicradio.net, I've got my show on 3:30 to 5 on Saturdays. 3:30 to 5 on Sundays is the Oath Keeper show, and 5:30 to 7 Eastern Time is the View from Inside Canada show. If you get on there, I'd like to use it also as a forum where people can discuss ideas about how we can build a truly free society. And it has been done in the past. And one of my greatest inspirations, he was actually a king. His name was Cyrus the Great.
and he was an emperor of the Persian Empire, which not a lot of people know about. And he actually invaded quite a bit of land. But wherever he invaded, he took over tyrannies. In other words, like he invaded Babylon when the Judeans, otherwise known as the Jews, were held in bondage there. And he set them free. He even invaded Greece around that time. It was around 500 BC, and Greece was experimenting with democracy. And they had a lot of failures. But when Cyrus moved in there, he actually emancipated the people as opposed to enslaving them.
Hmm.
And the important thing about Cyrus was he was able to unite the people regardless of ethnic and religious boundaries.
Okay.
And that's a really important thing in Canada because we do have a multicultural society. And I like to say that I'm proud of that multicultural society. But the other side of it is, and I don't mean to be cynical or anything, but I do believe it has been created to make it difficult for us to unite and actually seek some common thread and actually do something to make sure that freedom is what reigns supreme here.
Yeah, I agree with
that.
There
is a way to do it, and it's through tolerance, and there's a lot of different ways that we can make this happen, but bottom line is we have to maintain a common thread that we are all truly Canadians, and that through independence we can achieve freedom. Once that is achieved, peace and justice will follow in behind.
Hmm. That sounds good. With that, Doug, I'm going to thank you for staying up late back in Ontario, and thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks a lot, Ray. Thanks for having me on your show. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you. And you gave us a lot of food for thought here, and I will, on my website, I'll put those web addresses that you gave, so I will pass those on to the listeners.
Over the next day, probably by tomorrow, I'll send you a list of who's going to be on the show this weekend. It'll have all the particulars about how to get on the radio show.
Oh, there you go. Good, good. Okay.
RealPublicRadio.net. If you could post that for me.
Absolutely. Get that to me by Friday.
And I'm happy to pass along some promotion for your show. I've listened to it a few times.
Nice.
You're doing a fantastic job. You're real pro. I wish I had the dynamic presence that you have because, wow, you just really know how to handle a show.
Hey.
Well done. Absolutely.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Okay. Peace to you, brother.
Okay, brother.
Peace to all my brothers and sisters across Canada and throughout the entire world.
Very nice.
Love y'all.
Be well. Okay. Very nice. That's Doug Shapira. Boy, that was a nice way to end it. I meant peace to everyone, not that he likes my show. I guess I'm getting a little... don't take compliments too well, so that was pretty nice. Very well. I have a few audio clips that the station would like me to play, so I'm going to get to those, so I'll see in about 2 minutes, all right? Let's put them on. Okay, very nice. There's some announcements for you, and I'm going to get to the proper CHLY announcements that... that you hear every show. However, first off, I'm going to play a second track by Fucking News, FKN News. So that's, I guess, officially not a swear. This is called Bombed in the USA. All right, friends, back in a moment.
Bomb Cuba, China, and Iran. Propaganda made the people not give a fuck. They were bombed by the USA. They were bombed by the USA. They were bombed by the USA. They were bombed dropping by the USA. Now that was Bosnia, Afghanistan, Indonesia.
Okay, very nice. It's time for the events update. I'd like to thank the sponsors of this show and CHLY for supporting independent media. How important is that? So let's thank WarCriminalsOut.com as well as FalseFlagFlu.com. And I got a third supporter for this hour, Robert's Creek Vice, reminding you that silence is complicity. Very nice. I was going to talk about Chavez, who reported that he believes that the states caused the earthquake in Haiti by a what some people are calling a an energy weapon, the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program, more popularly known as HARP, which they say is an ionospheric research facility. I guess I am going to be reading a little bit of this. Jointly funded by the U.S. Air Force, the U.S. Navy, the University of Alaska, and the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA. Its purpose is to analyze the ionosphere and investigate the potential for developing ionospheric enhancement technology for communications and surveillance purposes. Started in 1993. So that is a little bit about it. And the Truther Girls, I'll just put up the... Well, am I going to play it next week? I don't know what I'm going to do. The Truther Girls cover this in... if you want to visit their YouTube site, it's called Haiti Quake, HARP, and New World Order. So how we are going to conclude the show is with a very powerful presentation by Splitting the Sky. And this comes to us from the 2009 Truth Convergence Conference, Project Uncensored. And Splitting the Sky was arrested in Calgary close to a year ago for attempting to place George W. Bush under citizen's arrest for being a war criminal. So John Boncour, Splitting the Sky, is speaking out and collecting more international members to back him. This is the first and only time that Bush has been attempted an arrest. Of course, John didn't get very close. You know, he got 1 foot past the line, and he was tackled and, well, later beaten up and all that. Splitting the Sky is not only going to outline his case that Bush and Cheney, the whole cabal, are war criminals, but also his strategy, his defense for the court case, which is coming up in March. So, let me see. The video can be seen at Vimeo, V-I-M-E-O, on my website. I will have a link to this and actually everything else that we covered today. So let me give you my web address. It's www.unbossed.livejournal.com. That's unbossed.livejournal.com. So, yeah, you can watch this video. The videographer, Steve Poole, did an absolutely fantastic job, very professional. The audio and video is top rate. It's some of the best conference footage I've ever seen. So well done, Steve, and thanks for the great work. And so this kind of finishes it off. I've played the other five, and so I'm saving the best for last with Splitting the Sky. And, so I've kind of already told you what it's about, so that's what you're going to get for the next half hour. I'll stop in and say goodnight to you folks before that happens. Everyone be well out there, and we'll talk to you before long. Oh, come on. There we go.
Splitting the Sky is a Mohawk activist, writer, and actor with a background of orphanages and school boards, boarding schools. Splitting the Sky emerged as a principal participant in the New York State Attica Prison Rebellion at the age of 19. He later became active in the American Indian Movement. He has engaged in numerous armed standoffs with both U.S. and Canadian authorities.
Where they were armed, he wasn't.
Including in our own backyard here, Gustafson Lake standoff in 1995. Well, thank goodness this man has lived, has survived, and lives to tell the tales. In 2001, he published the autobiography of Splitting the Sky from Attica to Gustafson Lake. There are copies here, and a tremendous read. I encourage that in your library. Now a leading 9/11 truth researcher, advocate, and speaker, Splitting the Sky was arrested and jailed in Calgary, Alberta in March 2009 when he attempted to place former U.S. President George W. Bush under citizen's arrest.
March 7th.
Oh, hi, friends. I wanted to tell you that that woman's voice that you're going to hear is from the movie Activist by Nathan Moulton. And Nathan has kindly allowed Splitting the Sky to use that footage in his presentations. And the footage is of Splitting the Sky being arrested in Calgary. So for the next 2 or 3 minutes, hear a clip from the movie Activist. There we go.
17th, 2009. Former President George W. Bush visits Calgary to make his first speech since leaving the White House. The event was by invitation only and was closed to the media. Many people called for his arrest. Splitting the Sky was charged with obstructing a peace officer in the execution of his duty. But in reality, the peace officer was obstructing him.
What you really don't see there, in these particular clips, you don't see the amount of snipers all up on the buildings with sniper rifles, balaclavas, guerrilla gear. And you know that not only does Bush travel with Secret Service as an ex-president, but he also travels with a private assassination squad known as Blackwater. And I'm sure you all know about Blackwater. Of course, now, because they've killed so many people and they're under so much investigation in Iraq right now, and that the leader is accused of murder himself, murdering people that were blowing the whistle, his own Blackwater troops blowing the whistles on the 17 known murders they committed in Iraq that they're being investigated in right now and about ready to face trial. But the fact was, now I guess they figured, well, we'll get rid of that bad name, the Blackwater, and we'll try to conceal ourselves and call ourselves Z. And when I think of Z, I think I want to go to sleep. You know, you get some Z's and you want to go to sleep. So you want to put the people to sleep, you know, because you get somebody by the name of Charles Manson, right, that ordered the killings of so many peoples, a mass murderer, and all of a sudden you want to turn around and call him Lolita. You know, that doesn't change the fact that he killed so many peoples as a mass murderer. But, of course, he wants you to make him believe that he's got a new name, that he's got a new history. I have to say that my understanding, my basic feeling about George Bush was for all the images that you and I were bombarded with for the last 8 years during his administration. And we saw the amount of people that were killed, that were apprehended post 9/11, going into Iraq and Afghanistan. And we had to look at the amount of people that were abducted by Blackwater assassination, private assassination squads, and other assassination squads that were outsourced by the U.S. government and paid as private independent contractors. And so you and I got a very horrible look at the amount of people that were being taken out, abducted from their homes. Muslim men, mostly men, and women and children were being forced to watch the men abducted, handcuffed, hooded, beaten, and killed on the spot if there was any level of resistance. And then we eventually saw these people being taken out by the hundreds and thousands in the so-called war against terrorism, a post 9/11 phase that came into being. And we watched these people being hauled in front of us, and we even watched Canada's JTF-2 grabbing them and turning them over to the United States to be taken to Guantanamo Bay, to be taken to Bagram and Abu Ghraib. So we know, and we saw the images of people being tortured, being forced to be naked, being forced to have unnatural sexual activities, being forced to be in stressed positions. Then we started hearing about these horrible things, being waterboarded. And then as we go along, we find out all the different forms. There was 100 different forms of atrocities that were being perpetuated on these people. Then we started finding out that many of these people, like predominantly a fellow by the name, a Muslim fellow by the name of Al Libby, I forget how to say his first name, but Al Libby was forced into waterboard. He was waterboarded 182 times in order to put the finger on Khalid Sheikh Mohammed to say that he was the one that masterminded 9/11. Now, you know, initially, after 9/11, the U.S. sent its troops with the coalition of the killing, the willing. Or is it the willing for killing? The coalition. Well, we got all the rest of the people in the world that were so upset about the murders committed by Arabs that knocked out the Twin Towers, brought those towers down and killed 3,000 people plus. So the world is totally angry, mad, ready to go to war on terror, to fight a war against terrorists. And, of course, we were told they were Muslims from Saudi Arabia. And so now we see all these images of people being tortured. And at first, we find out that we're supposed to be going into Afghanistan to apprehend a guy by the name of Osama bin Laden hanging out in caves with the rest of Al-Qaeda cells. And they're over there in the caves, man, getting ready to... They've declared war on the U.S. and North America because they just don't like our democracy. They don't like our way of life. So these are the justifications we're given post 9/11. Then all of a sudden, as they're making these bombing raids, and I can just tell you right now, because I'm just going to fill in the blanks for the sake of time, the only way they had already been into Afghanistan, they tried to negotiate deals with the Taliban to move in to get control of their opium crops, as well as access to the pipelines from the Caspian Sea Basin where Chevron and BP, ExxonMobil, and Dutch Royal and Alberta Oil have major claims in the Caspian Sea. But of course, we're going over there to apprehend terrorists so that we can export democracy while we exported tons and tons of bombs. Because the Taliban says, we're not going to get involved. No, we're not going to let you come in and access our pipelines and run them through Afghanistan into Pakistan and or run them through the Baku-Tbilisi-Kahan pipelines going through Georgia, Russia, into Russia, and other pipelines going in, I forget the name of it at the moment, going into China. So what we got is we got major economic interest in that region for oil and gas. And the pipeline going from Afghanistan down through Pakistan into India to Dabol, but it was Enron that was producing energy down in Dabol, India, that they wanted to get this, Cheney and Bush wanted to get that particular pipeline to for their friend Ken Lay. In any event, the only way that they could get in there is if there was a friendly, there was a legitimate government that was established and that they could get the sanction for them to come into their country. So when they put it through the Taliban, hey, you let us in, we'll pave your streets with gold. If you don't let us in, we're going to bomb you into oblivion. We're going to bomb you into oblivion. And they made these talks right over there, Crawford, Texas. They had these talks beforehand. As a matter of fact, Tony Blair and Bush, the whole Bush gang, were there with Dick Cheney and made these negotiations there and gave them this ultimatum. Well, the Taliban went back and they said, to heck with you. We're not doing business with you. We're a sovereign people. And no, we don't want to start growing poppies, heroin again, because we completely got eradicated it. And now today, according to Peter Dale Scott, there's 95% of the opium and heroin markets are back up again post 9/11. And then as well, they start moving all this gas and oil through the pipelines and have got control of it. Of course, there are major competing factors, the Chinese, the Russians, the Iraqi, the Iranians, and the U.S., China, the U.S., Great Britain, and Israel. There's major contention for those resources there, which could get very troublesome there very soon. So here we go. The only way they could then legitimize the government was to depose the Taliban and prop up another one. And the way they did that, of course, is they had us believe that this guy named Osama bin Laden was hitting us on 9/11. They hit us from the outside with 19 Arabs with box cutters and defeated in 3 hours, defeated the world's greatest military defense. Defeated the world's greatest air force defense with just box cutters and knives, little butter knives. If you believe that, man, there's lots of things. There's a bunch of bridges I'm trying to get rid of right now, and I need the money now. For real. So here, all of a sudden you're going to look at, oh, he's hiding in a cave with all the rest of his Al-Qaeda buddies. Oh, yeah, he's hiding in the cave, all right. Well, that gives us a reason to invade. A national emergency has been declared. They're allowed to go in with all the military forces, with all the coalition of the killing, and they start bombing the hell out of Afghanistan. Boom, 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 boom. People are getting killed by the thousands, being abducted and seized by the thousands, tortured and murdered by the hundreds. And then, oh, of course, they can never find no bin Laden. Or themselves, well, of course, they find innocent Muslim men and women and children that they abduct and they put into prisons and torture and murder. But no Osama bin Laden. Well, that was the convenient excuse to go in there to bomb the Taliban, to wipe them out, deliver the carpet of bombs they promised if they didn't do business with them, and install their puppet government, Hamid Karzai, who happened to be an executive of Unocal. And Unocal plays very prominent with Dick Cheney and Henry Kissinger, the Rockefellers, and all the other peoples involved, and many other peoples involved on international levels. So my initial feeling was, when I looked at all of those men being dragged through with hoods and forced to sit in stress positions and eventually after being tortured, and I'm watching all these people going into Guantanamo Bay, and there's just this complete, there's the complete execution of these poor individuals that are being blamed for what I believe was a bogus war. It was an orchestrated war. It was designed to deceive the world so that they could justify an incursion into the Middle East to fulfill the mandate of the Project for a New American Century. And you and I know that basically this Project for a New American Century was designed and orchestrated and drafted and signed by a number of people, including Dick Cheney, Scooter Libby, Douglas Feith, Paul Wolfowitz, Richard Pearl, a whole gamut of people. These people basically put this together in order to say, look, the only way we're going to advance our military, the only way we're going to be able to justify the military budgets is to be able to create some kind of war. Of course, now the war against the communists, the Cold War had subsided, so we're told. So there really is no need to send in, you know, no troops internationally without getting the American people saying, hey, or the Congress to say, hey, no, we're not going in. We're not going to put up in the draft of the Project for a New American Century. They're basically, we're calling for $96 billion. But I think they got something like 100 times that after 9/11. Because Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, Boeing, all of these big military, Carlyle Group, all these big war, L3 Communications, which, by the way, that same, they produce that West camera that oversees and allows the drones to hit from the air, remote control killing, which Obama is just bombing the hell out of everybody in the same fashion right now with massive military buildups in Afghanistan and Pakistan. So what do we got? So L3 Communications is the same INIS guy they used against us, a handful of natives up at Catoctin Lake in 1995. But that's another story you can look up at another time. So here we got the need to justify billions of dollars, trillions of dollars to go to the military. And then we find out the day before 9/11, all of a sudden we find out Donald Rumsfeld comes out and tells us, hey, oh yeah, by the way, there's $2.3 trillion missing from the Pentagon budget. We don't know where it's at. Boom, the next day you got 9/11. And people miss that. Where do you lose $2.3 trillion? Where did it go? Where's the accountability? Where's transparency? Where is it? Where did it go? And so what did I say? And what am I saying to all this? I'm saying that I've dug up over the years. Now, funny enough, it was only a year ago, it was exactly a year ago today that I gave this talk over here in Victoria called 9/11 Follow the Money. In that talk, I outlined 38 major corporations that benefited from put option stock trading prior to 9/11, totaling billions of dollars. And, and of course, I continue to do research. I haven't stopped researching 9/11 for 8 years. I never really came out on 9/11. Is that my water there? Until I met with Wayne Prunty here, and we did a thing at the the Peace Arch. What did you call it? The Convergence?
Truth Convergence
at the Peace Arch. And again, I was still coming out with just information, digging up information. But what I did do is I dug up, I got a list of the 38 corporations that benefited from the trades in blood, because people knew beforehand that some of these corporations were going to go down and others were going to go up. And some of the corporations that I identified was AIG, American International Group, insurance company, that after 9/11, they received billions of dollars, not only in put option stock trading, but they also advanced their international interest around the world with insurance companies. They were able to sell security to people of the whole world that had been terrorized by the sight of nothing less than the worst snuff movie on 9/11. So people, there was the biggest insurance bonanza in the world. So AIG, Maurice Hank Greenberg, was behind, one of the key players, along with Larry Silverstein, who put in $14 million just 6 months.
Oh, hi there, friends. I just want to let you know that you're listening to Splitting the Sky. This comes from November 29th, 2009, at the 2009 Truth Convergence. So that's who you're listening to. I'm your host, Raymond Geisler, with the Unbought and Unbossed show. This is going to be the last time you'll hear from me tonight, so we'll do it again next week. Okay, friends, be well.
2 weeks before to buy the leases for the Twins, and also 6 weeks with the inclusion that there'd be a terrorist clause, just happened to be 6 weeks beforehand, with the Blackstone Group, which put up $111 million with Silverstein, and the Blackstone Group was owned and controlled by a guy named Schwartzman, Stefan Schwartzman, but most predominantly his partner, who is Pete Peterson, former head of the Council on Foreign Relations, as well as the president of the New York City Federal Reserve. So now I get AIG, Hank Greenberg, then I find out about his son, Jeffrey Greenberg, who is the CEO of Marsh & McLuhan. And then they benefited from the put option stocks. And then there was this organization called Kroll Security. So now, as I'm going through my research, I find two things in my research that really, when it all boils down to it, constitutes major prima facie evidence, confessions, that should automatically, that actually the one has been investigated but got lost by the FBI. Nobody's investigating it anymore, but it was supposed to be investigated. And the other was a precondition before all that happened, a statement. Well, let me give you a statement by a fella by the name of Richard Andrew Groves. Oh, here it is right here. Okay, this is Richard Andrew Groves, and he gave this statement to someone. I'm not sure who it was at this point, but this is January 9, 2009. Richard Groves used to work for Silverstein Software on the 98th floor of the World Trade Center, one, and exposed insider trading between a few companies also based in the WTC, Marsh McLuhan, AIG, and Silverstein. He broke down the information into an auto recording back in 2006 that he called Project Constellation, after the style of a visual works by suicided artist Mark Lombardi. Okay, now, his quote. In 2000, I worked for a software development entity called Silverstein Software. I worked in sales, and in October of that year, I won the largest client in company history, which soon after led the acquisition of Silverstein by Novell. Now, footnote about Novell. Novell, does anyone know who owns Novell? Novell is owned by hedge fund billionaire George Soros. All right, in conceptual hindsight, and considering the audience, my Gordon Geico was a client named Marsh & McLellan. Marsh is the world's largest insurance brokerage. You might also recall that Marsh was located right below Cantor Fitzgerald in the North Tower. And approximately 295 Marsh employees were murdered that morning, along with the other innocent victims and employees who either knew too much or too little about their chosen work environment. Silverstream Technology was on the cutting edge of Internet solutions, offering software to web-enable the critical business functions of Fortune 500 companies, basically integrating and making available on the web the disparate legacy applications and mainframes while simultaneously streamlining workflow and traditional paper processes, with an end result being a lower cost of operation and more efficient transactions, because inefficiencies such as people being taken out of the loop. And here's where it gets interesting. Silverstream had built internet transactional and trading platforms for Merrill Lynch, Deutsche Bank, Bankers Trust, Alex Brown, Morgan Stanley, to name a few. I was responsible for these accounts at one time or another. Coincidentally, several of these companies purchased space in the World Trade Center and simultaneously completed disaster recovery and business continuous implementation just prior to 9/11. And hopefully you're already familiar with the roles that these financial institutions played on 9/11. And if you include Marsh & McLellan and another client of mine in 2001, AIG on the list, you pretty much have the major players involved in the financial aspect of 9/11 fraudulent trading activity. You might have also noticed the hidden information regarding Marsh on the bottom half of the screen, approximately 6.5 minutes into loose change. Okay, what does that say? This guy here has just told the whole world. He just admitted he's the one that moved all the money through the Silverstream software into international accounts worldwide. Of the billions of dollars that were traded, put out to stock traded prior to 9/11. Not just minutes or hours. We're talking about weeks and possibly months. And what happens? He's admitting he was the one that ran the money through that. There's enough information in that particular statement to call for an SEC investigation, to call for a joint congressional investigation in the FBI, to call for charges from the FBI to look into the activities, because one of the main characters that benefited was Alex Brown, a guy by the name of Buzzy Krogard, who was the third in charge of the CIA. These guys, he's admitting these guys were behind bringing those towers down. They knew they were coming down. They knew they were coming down, and they gambled on the lives of nationals from 92 different countries, including 25 Canadians, who are dead today because somebody decided they were going to bring those towers down. Because these are the people that should have been, they were supposed to have been indicted or looked into an investigation by the FBI and also by Kroll Security. But Kroll Security also happened to be owned by, was taken over. Jerome Howard was one of the initial persons that was the head of security from Kroll that allowed all these people to come into those buildings and set charges on all these different floors with these different corporations to allow those squibs you see to go blowing up. Now, I want to also let you know that in my investigation, I found out predominantly from the works of Kevin Ryan. You know who he is? You know who Kevin Ryan is? He's a prolific 9/11 truther and writer. Kevin Ryan basically makes the connection of the Twin Towers with Bush interest, the Bush family interest, predominantly with all of the buildings, all of the floors controlled by Dresser Industries. Does anybody know who they are? Dresser Industries was basically, and it's funny because years ago I ran across an article on Dresser Industries. These guys create pipelines. They also do building fittings, pipe fittings for all buildings, skyscrapers, for heating systems throughout the buildings, including the twins. And they lace everything, they coat all their heating systems with asbestos. I knew from day one, because I heard about the New York Port Authority and the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey going over years in a battle of over how they were going to get rid of the asbestos contamination in the Twin Towers. And then initially when the Twin Towers went down, I said, you know what, if I was David Rockefeller, who basically has a controlling interest, you know, before the Port Authority sold it over to Blackstone and over to Silver Streams, I said, if I was David Rockefeller, because I spent all my life studying these people from inside the belly of the beast, I said, if I was David Rockefeller, what would I do? Well, I'm not going to pay $1 billion for scaffolding, and I'm going to go inside and spend another $1 billion to clean the damn thing up. Dresser Industries was losing billions already. They had lawsuits out the yin-yang. And it wasn't until Kevin Ryan exposed the fact that Dresser Industries was absorbed in 1997, was born.